Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. If you catch CBS early tonight, Michael Jackson's music and All Hallows Eve adventures collide in an animated special, Michael Jackson's Halloween. Producer Dan Chuba and director Mark Dippey join me next. If you catch Animal Planet later tonight, the tanked twosome are at it again, making the nation more aquarium hospitable, one space at a time. Co-host Brett Raymer, and he'll be along next hour alongside executive producer Matt Carter. That's next half hour. And if you check Sundance TV this coming Wednesday night, you may enjoy a duo from Down Under with Chuckles Aplenty. On Rosehaven, you'll hear co-stars, co-creators, and best friends Celia Pakula and Luke McGregor next hour. Also ahead, a breaking news story about a new way people could get their new TV work on the air. YouTube's Living Room Invasion, a long wait for 10 days conclusion, and the answer to this week's classic trivia question. You might very well be surprised. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 61 degrees at the top of the hour here in Nueva York. Welcome to this Friday afternoon edition of the program All About Television. Great to have you with us wherever you're catching us along the Blog Talk Radio way. And we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. We have a 90-minute show for you, a lot of great guests along the way. So get involved. How do you do that? You give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Another way you're involved is our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. It's open and ready for you, so just use the phone or the room. You'll find the room, by the way, at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. We want to let you know off the bat that usually I communicate with you by smartphone. Our smartphone has low power right now, so you're going to hear some dead spots throughout today's program because I'm going from my computer screen in one room to my smartphone, that's landline, in another. That's also a speakerphone, too. So bear with us, and we'll all get through today absolutely in great shape. We'll have our first guest from Michael Jackson's Halloween live from Los Angeles after these news notes. A new opportunity for new series created by new talent opened up earlier this afternoon. Fusion's five-month-old creative board, involving such notables as Viola Davis and Jodie Foster, has launched an open call for scripted and unscripted series from young creators, whether or not they have already talent agency representation. Submissions will be accepted on an ongoing basis, and those green-lighted under this project will get funding from Fusion, which is owned by Univision Communications. There's no word yet on how many projects Fusion we'll go forward on. We've already made contact with the Fusion folks. We hope to have somebody from this project on our show a week from today. YouTube's appeal on smart TV sets and TV-connected devices is growing on the order of 100 million hours of videos per day. That's right, 100 million hours of videos per day. And that's according to Sundar Pichai, chief executive of YouTube parent Alphabet. That's all in living rooms all over and 70% higher than last October. It's not clear how much of that viewing is from YouTube itself and how much is from YouTube Red, the project's original content service, which is doing more unscripted and scripted programming by the month. And you'll have to wait until mid-December to see the outcome of ABC's 10 Days in the Valley starring Kira Sedgwick. ABC is moving the limited series from Sunday night to Saturday starting this weekend. However, due to college football now in that Saturday primetime position, ABC must wait for that sports regular season to end before putting 10 days in its place. As for this Sunday at 10 p.m., ABC will fill the hour with Shark Tank repeats. And that is news notes for today. Now joining us live from Los Angeles, the people that will be entertaining you with the new CBS animated special at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time tonight, Michael Jackson's Halloween. Producer Dan Chuba and director Mark Dippey. Dan and Mark, welcome in.
Hello.
Hello there.
Dan, we'll start with you. How long has this animation special been in the works for?
Well, I think we first started discussing the idea of something like this almost 2 years ago. But we got into serious production on it probably about 18 months ago when we started writing, working with Tim Hill and Dave Johnson to concoct the original 17-page treatment for the thing based on an idea that Mark had. And started working with the folks at the Michael Jackson Estate and doing the creative part of it. And then physical production, you know, 3 or 4 months after that, with designers, board artists, that kind of thing.
Mark, how long did you have this idea stewing in your head, and how big a Michael Jackson fan are you?
We had been approached. Dan had met with someone that they were interested in the idea of creating a special based on Halloween, because Halloween was a time of year that had special appeal to Michael, and he did a lot of work related to Halloween themes and ideas. And so that percolated for a while, and then we put together this treatment or this pitch, and fortunately for us, they invited us to the game. And in terms of Michael, his music was a big part of my world and the entire world when I was a young man, and I loved a lot of his music, and he had a big influence on me as well as most everyone.
I would have, for me, you know, I've worked on some of Michael's other projects in the past, so I all the way back to the black or white video, doing the morphing on that before morphing was really a known thing, and on the Ghost movie short film. On Remember the Time video with Eddie Murphy in it, and it was always an opportunity to do something pioneering. Michael's whole thing was about pushing the envelope of creativity. Loved technology. He was he loved makeup effects. There's always this sort of sense of fun, but then this pushing the envelope always from a filmmaking point of view. And my role of it was always related to computer stuff, animation, and visual effects, and he was just fascinated with those things. So I would say this about Mark too: he's a Halloween kind of guy.
Well, I mean a lot. You know, it's interesting. That's part of how our worlds crossed, or how my world crossed with Michael's, is that I was very interested in creating and seeing and telling stories of things that. That were sort of fantastic and otherworldly and different.
And MJ was always into that stuff too. I mean, he loved Halloween. He loved putting on costumes, playing characters. He was actually quite a good actor.
Yeah. And all of those things were inspirations to the piece that we made. It's all really derived, inspired, and based upon the music, the dancing, and the world that Michael Jackson created.
As you mentioned, Dan, every single one of MJ's videos, from Billie Jean to Beat It to Smooth Criminal to Black and White, was a groundbreaker in some way. Either the way it was shot, the way the choreography went, the way that the set design was, the film editing, the production techniques. But it seemed to, with Thriller, all come together. It had a storyline. It was the longest one of the videos. It had you on the edge of your seat in terms of the makeup, the costume design, the choreography, just everything about that video. And I'm wondering from both of you whether, when you were plotting out this special, whether it was a little confronting to sort of use Thriller as a benchmark, as sort of like the gold standard for what you wanted to do here.
Well, I'll start, Marco. So the from my point of view, I mean, everything you just said, definitely true, and we're aware of that. And you're always trying to, it's not really that I was thinking about topping something or being better than or competing with other work. It's, you know, our love of what he's done and the joy that we got of working on his other stuff, and knowing what he's all about, we just wanted to, like, extend that world, add more to it. And the star of our particular piece is the music, and there's some amazing things that go on with the music. Beyond, we have, you know, some major set piece, full-on original songs, but there's some, Kevin Antunes was our musical director on this, who's worked with Michael and the Estate a lot in the past, and he put together, I mean, it's Michael's music is the score of the movie, and it's used in original ways, and so the star is the music, Michael's music. And the dancing, I would say, is the other big star. And where we used, and Mark can talk about this some more too, this is one of the most inspirational parts of the whole thing, where we do a little bit of groundbreaking work. We used his choreographers, Rich and Tone Talladega. They were dancers with him back when they were teenagers, and grew up with him and became his choreographers eventually. And they and their dancers did the real dancing through the magic of motion capture, and we applied that real dancing that they developed with Michael to the characters in the movie. And that, I think, is our big... So the combination of the music and the dancing is what really makes this a standout piece, in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's no topping what Michael did. I mean, and all, and we are inspired by him and his legacy, and we are really just making a piece that is giving homage to that in a way. And the piece itself is filled with Easter eggs. If you're a fan of Michael's, there's so many things in there for you. As Dan mentioned, the entire score, and this was a sort of a bold idea, and it's fantastic, is derived from the musical elements of Michael's work. Songs, even the parts of songs. Of course, because it's an animated show, we never have a moment where a song plays its entire length. It's not a music video per se. It's a narrative story that's based on Michael's music, but it's all derived from and showing the love of Michael's world. So yeah, we won't even, there's no idea of even trying to top what Michael did, but really to show our love and respect of that and with this new piece we've created, to sort of embellish that world and add something to it.
The special we're talking about airs tonight on CBS at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and Pacific Time, too, leading off their primetime schedule for the night. We're talking Michael Jackson's Halloween original special and the first coming from the Michael Jackson estate. We've got producer Dan Chuba and director Mark Dippe with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And we have you listening as well. We're delighted you are. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. You have a question or comment for our guests? Give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have a blockbuster pre-Halloween hour coming your way on Monday. Get this. First half of the hour, Internet Radio exclusive, James Duff, the creator and executive producer first of The Closer, and now Major Crimes, going into its final season this coming Tuesday night on TNT. And on the second half of the hour, from Netflix's second season of Stranger Things, its Emmy Award-winning program that had its second season premiere earlier today, co-executive producer Dan Cohen. That's James Duff of Major Crimes, Dan Cohen from Stranger Things, two back-to-back Internet Radio exclusives with us right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. That's coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Mark, once you got the green light to do this special, what were you looking at in terms of both the plot and the animation style? The great thing about animation is you can go all sorts of ways. You can go CGI, computer generated. You could do, as you said before, motion capture. You could do traditional cell. Did you pretty much have a particular style in mind?
Yeah, I mean, one of the first things, as Dan mentioned, we were fortunate to work with people who have worked with Michael, Rich and Tome, amazing choreographers and dancers who danced with Michael, part of the history tour and other things. And for us, that's an essential part of who MJ was, his movement, his performance, his image, his silhouette on the stage. And so we immediately felt that 3D animation was the way to go. So you could create that depth and dynamic perspective of what that Michael created in our animated piece. And the other part, so that was the first big idea for us, or big conclusion. And the second part, we wanted to create a sort of fantastic, magical feeling. And so animation is very natural for that. And so our worlds are somewhat, they're just fantastic, colorful. Some parts of it are darker. Again, this is Halloween themed. And we also wanted to incorporate the ideas of Halloween. So we have pumpkins, we have a black cat character, we have spiders and spider webs. So there's a lot of the sort of Halloween themed ideas, which of course Michael loved and incorporated in his work. And that's a big part of the visual, let's call it design style. You asked about the story. So again, the idea here was to tell a story based and inspired by MJ's world. And one of the things that we felt right away is music is important to everyone, and Michael's music is important to everyone. And music and songs are, people connect them to important moments in their life. And music are people identify so strongly with music or songs or musical artists like Michael. And so we thought, you know, and it's a very important part of young people's lives. And we thought it was the story we came up with is the idea of young people in which music is important to them facing a big decision in their life and how this music helps get them through that to get to the place where they really needed to go. And in this story, Michael creates a magical world that these young adults can go have a spiritual journey through to help them find that answer that they're searching for and get the confidence and courage to follow their hearts. So that's the idea of the story. Now, of course, once you get into that world, it's crazy and wild and a lot of fun, scares, dancing, music, etc. But that's sort of the backbone of the story we're trying to tell.
Dan, what are some of the classic Michael Jackson tunes we'll hear in the special tonight, and how do you figure where they get placed?
Well, there's sort of two levels, and it's interesting you asked. We were just looking at the music cue sheet, which is showing all the music that was used, and it is a huge number. I don't even know what the exact count is. Over 20,
yeah,
20 songs are used.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, in different various ways. But we have set piece songs that we build the big dance numbers around, which are the songs as you've heard them. And then there's all the other music that's the bed for the story that rises and falls depending on the emotion of the moment. So, the original songs, we worked very closely with the estate on choosing which songs were appropriate and how to, you know, lead up to the finale, and we had some ideas that Mark had written for certain set pieces and things, fun gag that he wanted to do. We wanted to find music that was appropriate, you know, kind of fit the gag, and so it was a balancing act, and we kind of worked our way through it and settled on that stuff fairly early in the process. The second step, though, that's used as a score, which is the bulk of the other song, Kevin Antunes and I worked very closely with the estate and Mark. But it was really the musical director was saying, you guys should try this. How about that? And he would look at the movie in early days even. We're showing him storyboards and everything. And he'd start sending stuff to Mark, noodling, testing. And it's a back and forth, you know, with multiple people involved. But it's a creative process trying to find, and it's infinitely malleable with today's technology once you start mixing those pieces together. It could be almost anything. So, and that was actually the hard part. We almost had too much. You know, it's just a rich tapestry of stuff you can choose from. It's like, how do you, everything's good. You know?
Well, it's actually quite amazing. I mean, as Dan said, Kevin Antunes knows Michael's library of work, let's call it. I don't know what the correct term would be, but and working with the state, he has access to these original sources. And he is able to find, and that's the amazing thing.
So I'd say John Branca, who has been with Mark, been with Michael forever, and Karen Langford, who's been with the estate for a long, 25 years or something, and they know everything. So like we couldn't have done that without them, because they are making, they just know where everything is, and there's hidden gems, and that they would point out to us, hey, what did you guys think about this? Let me show you this. They just know, you know, there's so much there that we needed guidance from John and Karen to help us through the music.
Yeah, I mean, this whole project was John and Karen's idea. But and I would say that you bring something up. Even though I'm a massive fan, I learned a lot of this project about the richness, complexity, and depth of Michael's world that John and Karen and Rich and Tone and Kevin were all. I mean, it was amazing. Just, it's almost like Michael had created his own language, his own musical language, his own performance language, his own dancing language, and to really get into it to see how rich and deep it was quite amazing, and we couldn't have done it without people like Kevin, who knew the material, understood that there, if we had a scary moment, with dialogue that required some kind of more soundtrack sounding piece,
you know,
you knew where to get it. Yeah.
Remember, we were at Comic-Con. Mark and I were at Comic-Con with the movie in New York, and Rich and Tone, the dancers, were with us, and they did a little demo in the Q&A panel that we did, and they explained Michael's dancing in sentence structure, that certain moves were certain kinds of punctuation. This is an exclamation mark. This is a comma. And they would perform the moves. They performed it for the audience, and it really was a language. That he was, so we tried to keep all that in mind. We didn't know that until we got into it, of course, but you know, we're trying to incorporate that. It's pretty deep, actually.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of little things there for whatever it is that you love about the amazing world of Michael Jackson. There's pieces of a lot of things, that, at least inspirations that are derived from those things. So.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. And I would say that's definitely something that viewers will see in the movie. It's packed.
There's
a lot going on.
Yeah, one thing I do want to say, too, just this is a fantastical, stylized world. See, it's not real. We're not just playing a song all the way through. The dancing is completely based on everything Michael's created, but it's there to tell. There's a story being told. The designs of the characters, the way they look, everything is a fantastic stylized realization. And again, it's all in homage and honor and love based on Michael's work. But it is a distinct piece in itself.
Mark DePay is the director, Dan Truba is the producer, and what they're doing is on tonight on CBS, tonight at 8 p.m. East Pacific Time. We're talking the animated special, Michael Jackson's Halloween. Ben and Mark are with us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted you're with us on this Friday afternoon. 61 degrees at the top of the hour here in the greater New York metro area. And still an opportunity for you to be involved with our pair just by using the phone. 646-652-2906. The number's good anywhere you're catching us across the country or globe-wide on Blog Talk Radio. Or check out blogtalkradio.com/televised, and there you will find our chat room. 1 week from today on the program, we'll showcase a brand new venture that was announced last week during NYC Television Week here in the Big Apple. It's called Only Hub, and it's yet another way for people to possibly get their TV shows on the air. It's from Olympusat, the Florida-based organization that distributes English and Spanish language networks to cable and cell of the country. And we'll have the CEO of that service, Tom Moeller, with us to discuss Only Hub. And we also hope, as I mentioned earlier in the show, to have somebody from the brand new Fusion Creative Board venture that we had as a news note earlier in the program on this very edition. That's next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. As you're both of you are putting the special together, when do you figure this character would make this voice go? Or this voice, I should say, should make this character go? Because you have a bunch of super talents working these voices. Christine Baranski, Alan Cumming, Brad Garrett, Lucy Liu, Elementary, Jim Parsons, of course, The Big Bang Theory. I'm curious what comes first, the character or the voice that fits the character?
Well, I'll start. I mean, you can jump in. But well, you know, from a practical mechanical production point of view, we start storyboarding and designing characters kind of start simultaneously once you have some writing done. And so design definitely is first. We don't have a voice in mind typically on any of our movies until we start to realize what, because the character goes through an evolution, you know, in the design phase, and you don't really know who it is for a while.
I mean, it's true. So it starting kind of with a blank page in a way, and we have these ideas of this fantastic, this sort of magical world created by Michael, young adults going through there. It's a world that is based upon his music, and we wanted to have Halloween tropes, etc. So we're designing characters, and I think one of the first things is we're designing these key characters. We have a pumpkin-headed dude. We have a mad, crazy black cat character. We have a spider kind of leader, and those are Halloween ideas, and we're just doing some drawings. And then, of course, our protagonists, our main leads. That's a big thing. And we have a girl who loves dancing, Victoria, voiced by Kiersey Clements, fantastic young actress. She was wonderful. And then a young man who we call Vincent, and that's voiced by Luke Till, who also did a great job. So those characters came out of, again, we wanted young adults where music is a big part of their life. So Victoria's interested, she loves dancing, music and dancing. Vincent loves music and has his dream of being a DJ, being involved in music production. But of course they're facing other pressures and expectations. And they go into this magical world and they meet these characters that are really spiritual embodiments of what Michael created. And so you'll see all kinds of Easter eggs in each of these worlds, and there's three main worlds that the characters enter based on these lead characters. So they were all designed, and then we went on a crazy search for the voices that would do the work the best. For example, for our pumpkin-headed guy, Jim, that's voiced by Jim Parsons, and I mean, he's wonderful, did a great job. But that is the process we went through.
Yeah, and you know, we're working with CBS is our partner too, so there's make some sense to work with people they're familiar with and they like.
Yeah, that is true. A lot of casting.
Do both of you see this special as the beginning of more projects for television from the Michael Jackson estate? How interested is the estate in doing more television?
Well, I think you'd have to ask John Bronk about that, but I would personally love that and hope that it works. I think this is a very specific project based on lots of other things that are happening with the Michael Jackson property, but also because specifically Halloween scares, thrills, and fun, and fantastic creatures, and wearing, you know, costumes and makeup effects, etc. As Dan mentioned earlier, that's just all part of Michael's world. So this was a perfect project to help represent, to help pay homage to what Michael had done. I just hope it continues.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have any control over it, but if it were up to Mark and I, we would do a lot more because we love it. The music, I mean, living with that, it's pretty nice.
No, actually, it's kind of a no-brainer. Look, it's some of the greatest music ever made, you know, and to use that to base, let's call them visual animated numbers around or any kind of storytelling, visual performance, it's as good as it gets. So it was a great opportunity and very, very inspiring and very fertile material. There's just no doubt.
Michael Jackson's Halloween, a brand new hour-long animated special, and it premieres tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and Pacific on CBS. Check your local listings for the CBS station in your area. For more details about the program online, go to www.cbs.com. Michael Jackson's Halloween, tonight on your local CBS station, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, the start time. Dan Chuba, the producer, Mark DePay, the director, thank you both very, very much for coming on hours before your show goes on the air. Good luck with the special tonight. I've seen clips. It's going to be a winner. And for whether or not you enjoyed growing up with Michael Jackson, I think you'll fall in love with his music and his work all over again. It's a wonderful, wonderful treat. Thank you for bringing it to us.
Thank you, Sam. Great talking to you.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome, Dan. Mark, take care.
Bye.
Producer Dan Chuba, director Mark DePay, joining us live from Los Angeles. We're going to take a quick, short break. When we come back, we'll have the answer to this week's classic trivia question. And coming up in our next half hour, guess what? Tank is back for a brand new season, season number 6. They've been on for 6 years. We'll have one of the co-hosts. We'll have the executive producer. That's in our next half hour. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Coming up next, our classic trivia question of the week, but right now, a message from the fine folks at Audible.com. Well, if you're a fan of great music, and we just had a story about great music, Michael Jackson's Halloween, well, you might like this wonderful audiobook from Audible.com, and you can get it with a 30-day trial. It's a brand new tome from one of the great classic people in American music, Charlie Daniels. Remember the Charlie Daniels band that went down to Georgia, etc.? Well, Mr. D has come up with a brand new audiobook and a new book out on stores called Never Look at the Empty Seats. And for Audible.com, he narrates it himself. And you can get it right now if you go for a 30-day, one-month trial at Audible.com. And all you have to do to get that trial going is use this URL. It's audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com is the leading audio provider of spoken digital entertainment and information, also inspiration too, with over 180,000 titles to choose from. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. Remember, just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. Get one free audiobook like Charlie Daniels' new tome, Never Look at the Empty Seats, or one of your choice. You get a one-month trial and great customer service
because
Audible
guys, but
by Amazon.com.
Yeah.
So, audibletrial.com/televised. Find out for yourself why audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. Now it's time for the answer to this week's classic trivia question. Sorry, we did not get a winner, so no prize awarded, or I should say prizes awarded. That is the Genius Finale DVD from National Geographic and the showrunner book by one of our previous guests in the last month, Cy Chermak, the legendary executive producer behind Ironside, The Bold Ones, and Chips. The question, name the original host of Name That Tune. Some people might have thought George DeWitt. He was the big host of Name That Tune during the 1950s when it first came on the air, but he wasn't the original host. And neither was Bill Cullen, who some people may remember for a short spell. The original host, Red Benson. When the show started in 1952, he was there for the first 2 years. Then Bill Cullen came along for about a year, year and a half, and then George DeWitt came and took the show on to the natural end of its first run on the air in 1959 in prime time. So Red Benson was the original host of Name That Tune. We'll have another classic trivia question for you on Monday's episode. And if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please disclose your name and where you're from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win the two-hour finale of Genius, the Emmy-nominated miniseries starring Jeffrey Rush as Albert Einstein, plus the showrunner book by Cy Chermak. That will all come to you. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, use email only to get the answer in, and make sure on your email you let us know where you're from and your full mailing address. And if you missed the question on Monday, when we will have James Duff from The Closer in Major Crimes and Dan Cohen from Stranger Things, whose second season started a few hours ago on Netflix, well, if you missed the show or missed the question, we will post the question tomorrow on Tuesday morning on my Facebook page and also on my Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, be in, and all the very best. When we come back, we'll be joined from Las Vegas and New York by the executive producer and one of the co-hosts of Animal Planet's long-running series, Hank. We'll get to that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the Space Internet Radio all over the world, www.blogtalkradio.com, with 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the Ken and Rye Show. Check them out tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best of BTR available 24/7 at YouTube.com. And if you have Apple TV, check out our show and other BTR shows at Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order it online. Welcome back for part two of Tomorrow Be Televised 90-minute edition on this final Friday of October 2017. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Great guests coming your way in the hour ahead if you just joined us, and we invite you to be part of the program. All you have to do is ring in 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. If you watch Animal Planet regularly, you know they deal a lot with cats and dogs and lions and tigers and oh my kind of stuff. But one of the most longest-running shows doesn't deal with dogs and cats and lions and tigers and jaguars and elephants, etc. It deals with fish. It deals with the world of aquarium. And it deals with very unique spaces those aquariums get set up. It's called Tank. It is now in year number 6, and you can find it tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local cable or satellite channel that runs Animal Planet. We have two of the folks involved in making that show happen this next half hour. First of all, joining us live from New York, the executive producer of the program, Matt Carter. Matt, good to have you with us. Matt, are you there? Hello, Matt. And also with us, I believe, from Las Vegas is the co-host of the show, Brett Raymer. Brett, are you here?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Brett. How you doing?
All right, I'm doing great.
Why do you think Tanks has run so long and so well?
You know, I think, number one, I think it has a really good family dynamic. And I think people could really understand, you know, everybody, our family is pretty much like every other family. You know, they have a lot of fun, a lot of good times. So people could really relate to our family. But I also think fish, you know, public aquariums, there's so many public aquariums around the country and they never go out of business. And people are very fascinated with fish. And I think our show has a lot of, you know, everything. It has a lot of fun, a lot of entertainment, a lot of educational value. And people always tell us it's something they can sit down and watch with their kids, and they love that.
And we should point out, by the way, that your partner in crime, Unfortunately, could not make it. Something happened to him at the last moment, so we hope he's doing great, and we thank you for making sure that you got on board. And we're still waiting for Matt, I believe, to join us, and as soon as we find out that Matt is up and running and ready to go, we will put him on the air. I believe he is live from New York. How did you and Wayne decide to get involved with Tanked? I know you both run a business for a long time. How did the opportunity to be on Animal Planet come your way?
So many years ago, people used to come into our office and turn around and they were like, you guys are so funny, you guys should be on television. We used to hear it all the time, not once, not twice, but we used to hear it a lot. So I turned around to my family, I was like, guys, people say we could be on TV. I'm like, I'm telling you, we could be on television. I go, I think we got a really good cast of characters. And they used to look at me like I had two heads. And I was like, no, I'm telling you guys, we could really do this. So they didn't ever believe me, so I just got this kick to that we could be on television, and then I went to the UNLV Film School and talked to one of their professors, found out how to get the whole thing done, and basically got the show filmed myself, shopped it around, got it to a friend of mine who got it to another friend who eventually got it to Animal Planet, and then here we are later. And it's actually, this is our seventh season. We're actually finishing up our seventh season, and we just shot 132nd episode.
That comes out to about, oh, like, what, 15 or so episodes, 20 episodes of a year?
Yeah, we're a little bit. We get about 20 every year. Our first season we had 6, and then we had 24, 22, and a couple. But we average about 20 episodes a year.
So how do you and Wayne pick where you go and what assignments you take on?
You know, it's a collaborative effort. You know, we get hundreds and hundreds of write-ups, people that write in all the time. You have to have a really good story. You have to have something interesting, and the aquarium itself has to be something unique. There has to be, you know, something special about it. And we look at it as a team with the executive producer and Animal Planet, and we all put it together, and we come up with what we feel is going to be the best fit for the television show.
How long does it take to do a complete assignment? Is there like a sort of set time that you have for both of you to arrive at somebody's place, get the assignment going, and finish it?
So usually the whole process, there's a lot of process in between before the actual install, but it takes about 3 days for us from beginning to end. But there's a lot of pre-planning. There's weeks and weeks of pre-planning that go into you know, making that happen. So, but I say once on the actual site with the client, we're there for about a total of 3 days.
And when you go in, let's say, are there certain objectives you have for day one, for day two, and day three when everything's complete?
Yeah, absolutely. So day one is usually we try to get out the consult where we're talking to the client and, understanding what he wants and how it gets done. And then in television world, we go back to, you know, the shop. But realistically, all that pre-planning had been done already. So the aquarium is actually outside on the truck. So what we do is we'll get there, do our day one. The executive producer and the crew does their before shots. We go, we meet with the client, and then we basically do the install. Our goal day one is to get the aquarium up and running. I'm ready for day two where we put fish in, and then usually day two we reveal it to the client, and then day three they usually shoot their beauties and final shots for production.
Do you go for a specific type of client or a specific kind of habitat, whether it's where you are in Vegas or anywhere around the country?
No, not specifically. I mean, you know, our company caters to everybody. You know, people just have this illusion that we're on television and, you know, that they can't afford one of our aquariums. Our aquariums, we make aquariums from, you know, 50 gallons all the way on up to the millions of gallons. As far as habitat, you know, we make aquariums or tanks for any habitat, whether it's reptiles, snakes, amphibian creatures, you know, fish. I mean, you name it, the tanks are used for whatever. Do we prefer any specific one? You know, me, I enjoy doing, you know, artificial reefs, and I enjoy doing fish aquariums, but I also like doing outdoor ponds and turtles. I think it's pretty cool.
You are hearing Brett Raymar. He is one of the co-hosts of Tank, the popular series that's on Friday nights at 9 p.m., including tonight at 9 Eastern Pacific Time on Animal Planet Now in year number 7. Brett joins us live from Las Vegas this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Happy you're with us on this Friday afternoon, 61 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Simon Applebaum with you live from the Big Apple. If you have a question or comment for Brett, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. We are still trying to find Matt Carter, the executive producer of the series, who's supposed to join us live here in New York. And as soon as we hear that he is available, we will get him on the air. Remember, coming up Monday, we have a blockbuster hour for you to wrap up the month. Believe me, not one, but two internet radio exclusive interviews. On the first half of the hour, James Duff, the creator and executive producer, first of The Closer and now Major Crimes on TNT, which on Tuesday night will enter its sixth and final year on the air. Or will it be their final year on the air? There's been some talk that perhaps another network might pick it up after TNT completes that run. We'll talk to the source directly, James Duff, in our first half hour. On our second half hour, Stranger Things' second season premiered earlier today on Netflix, and we've got the co-executive producer, Dan Cohen, in another internet radio exclusive interview. James Duff from The Closer and Major Crimes, followed by Dan Cohen of Stranger Things on Netflix. That's all happening Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. I have a hunch we're going to get a lot of phone calls and a lot of chat room reaction. So, word to the wise, get there early, right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, Monday, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Brett, when you take assignment, when you and Wayne take assignments on, are there certain common fish or reptiles that people ask for?
Yeah, people want the really colorful. When it comes to saltwater fish, you know, we hear a lot of everybody's been like, you know, the Finding Nemo, so everybody knows what a clownfish is. They know what, you know, a blue tang are. So those are very, you know, specific fish. But most clients leave it up to us. They just want to make sure that the fish are compatible. And when we put fish together, that's the first thing we look at is compatibility.
Mm-hmm. And since your exploits have been on Animal Planet, are there certain fish or reptiles or creatures that they would not have asked you for that they now do because they see you on the air and they think, oh, these guys can handle everything. They're super people. They can handle anything.
Yeah, we get a lot of shark requests now. We do a lot of shark tanks on the air, and people see that now you can have these shark aquariums in your home, and they're pretty amazing. So we do get a lot of requests for a lot of different shark aquariums.
How big are those shark aquariums? What I love about radio is they can be very imaginative in talking about it. I've never heard of sharks. How big are these shark tanks, especially if you have them inside someone's home?
Some of them can range. You know, what we always recommend with shark aquariums is that you don't do sharks in a square or a rectangle aquarium. We recommend you do them in a cylindrical or a racetrack. So on a racetrack-shaped aquarium, you're looking at something that's possibly, you know, 8 feet long, left to right. Front to back, you're looking at maybe 3 feet, and then minimum height 3 foot tall for the aquarium. And then on an oval, which is a cylindrical aquarium, you're looking at maybe a 5 foot diameter, maybe by, you know, 3 or 4 foot tall.
There's a TV show on called Chopped on Food Network, Tuesday nights at 9 and 10 o'clock. And it's a competition show where you have a group of chefs who have to apply their creativity to some of the wildest foods or wildest selections that they've ever seen. And there's a person on that show who is in charge of finding the most way-out food you can find. What is the most way-out request in terms of fish or creatures that you and Wayne have gotten when you've been on the air?
Creatures as well. I mean, it's not creatures. We don't get so much the crazy requests for creatures. It's more the requests for the actual kind of aquariums that people want to design. So, you know, we've had people call us up and ask us, you know, can you make the tank in the shape of a unicorn? Or the craziest one I've heard is, you know, look, I have my son's face and I want to send you guys a picture and I want you to make an aquarium that, you know, looks like my son's face. We get requests like that all the time. But octopus, those are creatures that people request that we really try to steer people away. Jellyfish are another thing that people request a lot that we try to steer people away. But those are the strangest ones, I think.
Mm-hmm. Does anything faze you and Wayne? And how do you deal with that kind of crazy request, especially when they want the tank or the space to go in a certain shape. Like, you know, the face of my son, the face of my wife, that kind of thing.
Usually we explain to them the process, and we explain to them how much it's going to cost. Because, I mean, anything can be done if you have the right amount of money. And then usually that steers them in a different direction.
Apologize for the pause there. We're just going back and forth between our speakerphone and our computer to see if anybody has called in or using our chat room. We're still trying to get Matt Carter, the executive producer of your show, on the air, Brent. As soon as we can locate him,
sure,
or somebody
no
can,
problem.
We can get him on the air. Does anybody that you work with, any of your clients, do they have a situation where you and Wayne start work on a project and it's captured on camera? And then somewhere along the line, day one, day two, you know, close to deadline, day three, they say, I don't like this. You got to change this. You got to go another direction with this. This is not working out.
Normally it doesn't happen that way, because we make sure that, you know, they get all kinds of, because everything's built prior to us going there. So we make sure that everything gets, they get photos, that their reps get photos, and everybody gets everything that they're finalized. I mean, they have renderings. Our aquariums are pretty close to the initial rendering. So once they sign up on the initial rendering, it's pretty much hard for them to change, because they're under contract with the network based on design. Because the network approves a certain design, and once they approve the certain design, because it's a whole process that it has to go through to get approval. So once it gets approved, you can't just stop in the middle and be like, I really don't like that. Now I want to change my mind. So it doesn't really work that way.
Mm-hmm. That's a difference from other shows. For example, when you've seen programs like Restaurant Impossible on Food Network, or other shows which involve a transformative experience, where you transform not only the space, whether it's a restaurant or a home, but also the lives of the people involved. That sometimes the drama of the situation comes from when somebody doesn't like what's being done to their place, or they sort of have an issue with their staff or with certain types of customers. Or so on. How transformative is Tanked? Do you find that when you and Wayne complete your work, that there is a shift in how people are being in terms of how they see their home, how they see their lives? Does that come across?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, aquariums do amazing things for rooms. They do amazing things for people's demeanor. They do amazing things for people's families. So it's enjoyment. You know, people, when we put things in people's houses, I mean, we call them living art, is what we call the pieces that we do. And when people, they really, really enjoy, you know, these aren't clients. Our clients aren't clients that we just go out and cast and be like, hey, you know, we want you on our show. You know, you want an aquarium, you know. These are clients that want to be on our show, that are fish lovers, that enjoy animals, that, you know, maybe have kids in their family that, you know, watch the show and they want to have one of ATM's, you know, awesome pieces, or they live on the beach and they want to bring a piece of the ocean into their house. So, you know, it's really amazing what these things do and how they transform families, and how when people get these things in their house, you know, we find them I think it was Alyssa Milano when we did hers. People still ask her about her aquarium, and she's like, oh, my God, I enjoy it every day. I like to sit in front of it, have a glass of wine, watch the fish, so forth and so on. So, you know, people definitely do enjoy what we do for them.
In addition, Alyssa has done some wonderful work with the ASPCA and with other animal groups in terms of preserving wildlife, especially cats and dogs who have been mistreated by their owners or found an unfortunate lot in their life. Who are some of the celebrities that you've worked with over the years?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you one more time.
Yeah, who are some of the celebrities like Alyssa Milano that you have had over the years on Tanked?
Oh, God, we've had some of the most amazing celebrities. You know, we've had Betty White. We've had Neil Patrick Harris. You know, we've had athletes. We've had endless athletes. We've had Marshawn Lynch and Johnny Damon and Anthony Davis, and we have had Mario Lopez on the show, and Dwayne Wade, and Ryan Newman from NASCAR. We have Adrian Peterson this season, and Antonio Brown. We've had some of the most amazing. Shaq has been on our show 3 times. Tracy Morgan has been on our show a couple of times. We've had some really, really amazing celebrities. John Wall from the Washington Wizard, Jimmy Butler, Titus O'Neil from the WWE, Chris Jericho. There's just been some amazing celebrities. We're blessed and we're fortunate to have so many of these people that love our show, that have kids that definitely love our show as well.
You have so many sports stars from different sports, whether it is basketball, baseball, and people in the sports entertainment field, pro wrestling, a.k.a. What do you learn about them from dealing with them? What side of themselves that you don't see on the field or even off the field, immediately off the field, that you see face-to-face, up close?
Man, it's pretty funny you say that, because I've learned a lot. They're regular people, they're just like me and you, no different. We're just blessed to be famous or blessed to be celebrities, but just because they have more money than me, or just because they have nicer places than me, and just because they do different things than me, they're really exactly the same person that I am. They're no different, They treat us. Wade and I, the difference between Wade and I is we were regular guys that became celebrities. We had a business for, our business has been in business for 22 years. So we've done this a long time. We've always done well, but being able to go into all these celebrities' homes and meet their kids and meet their families and be able to hang out with them and to actually know that they really enjoy us and we're just regular guys that have a TV show, that's kind of something special. And that made me believe that they're just regular people, and you could just enjoy them for what they are and they can enjoy you for what you are, and then that's pretty important.
We're enjoying our time with Brett Raymar. He's one of the co-hosts of Tanked. It's the long-running series on Animal Planet. You can find it tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time in the midst of its 7th year on the air. Brett joins us live from Las Vegas, where he and Wayne, his partner in Aquarium Crime and Time, are based. And they're with us live this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum live from New York. Delighted you are with us on this Friday afternoon, last one of October 2017. And if you have a question or comment, you can still get it in at 646-652-2906 or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And if you're new to the program, you've just joined us for the program All About Television, you can catch up very easily. Just go to our homepage anytime you like. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's where you'll find all of our episodes on Blog Talk Radio, current and past. And you can also find our episodes on iTunes.com in podcast form. Also, if you have Apple TV, the iTunes podcast app. You'll find our show and other Blog Talk Radio shows right there for you 24/7 anytime you like. You can download them to your smartphone or tablet. Take us on the go anytime this upcoming pre-Halloween weekend. And remember, if you don't have Apple TV, it's very easy to get Apple TV. Go to an Apple store near you or order it online. Brett, what's the most unique space that you've had an assignment for? And I'm not talking about, a tank that's part of a wall or part of its own, let's say, base in a particular room. But I'm curious whether, like somebody said, make my pool an aquarium or make my whole wall an aquarium. What's the most unique request you've had in the 7 years the show's been on the air?
Well, since the show's been on the air, we did a tank in Dallas, Texas. It was for a church called IBOC. And it was 70 feet long by 18 feet wide by 10 foot tall. And it has 2 tunnels that you walk through to get into the congregation. And they actually built the aquarium. We built the aquarium first, and then they built the building around the aquarium.
And Brett, I believe we have now been joined by Matt Carter, the executive producer of the show from New York. Matt, are you there? Hello, Matt. Thought we had him. Okay. We'll see. Again, we'll try to get him. We have a few more minutes left, so we'll see if it comes on. Who are some of the people that you deal with, or some of the most unique assignments that you have this the rest of the season?
So the rest of the season, like I said, we have Anthony Davis, Adrian Peterson coming up. We're going to be doing Ludacris. We have local Las Vegas. We have a company called the Mini Grand Prix. We're working with another company that's based in Vegas that everybody knows, Zappos Corporation. We're working with them as well. And other than that, after that, we're pretty much done. We close out season 7, and we're getting ready to sign contracts for seasons 8 and 9.
And I understand that as this season comes to a close, that some interesting things are heating up in your personal life.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be. I just got engaged, and we're gonna showcase that on one of the episodes. And it's pretty awesome. I've been with my fiance for 6.5 years now, and she's been an amazing part of the television show, but behind the scenes. So now everybody's going to get a chance to meet her. They met her in a couple episodes, but now they'll really get a chance to meet her.
Did the show bring you two together?
No, actually, we met each other through mutual friends, and when the show first started, I was in my beginning of my first season when we met.
How long do you and Wayne want to keep the show going?
You know, we really enjoy making the show. You know, we're blessed to have it go on this long. Like I said, 2% of all television ever makes 100 episodes, and we're looking to go to 200. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess until I don't enjoy it anymore, or until the network decides to pull the plug. But, you know, I guess that's it. I mean, we're, like I said, right now we're looking at least another 3 more years, hopefully. And Wade and I, hopefully in January, we're going to be going on tour. We're going to be going city to city, doing a little bit of an hour and a half on-stage stand-up type thing, talking about the TV show, and that should be coming to you right here in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Does it surprise you that on a network that touts a lot of unique shows dealing with cats and dogs and lions and tigers and how we as a society, we as a culture, not just here in the United States but worldwide, you know, deal with our animal friends, that that your show is one of the top rated ones year after year, that people are so interested in how aquariums are put together, where they can be put together, the kind of fish and creatures that can be in those aquariums. I'm curious what you think the ultimate benefit of the show has been to people who watch it.
Well, I think it's a combination. I think, you know, number one, it's good family values. I think it's extremely important, you know, about how we do our show and how we treat our family. But number two, I think it's, you know, education. You know, you're learning about the ocean. Our kids today that we grow up with are going to need to be the guys that are going to be the scientists and the marine biologists and all the kids of the future to save our oceans and to do the things that we need as a society. And also, three, I think it's fun. You know what, man, in light of everything that goes on in our society and what's going on in the world, I think you can turn our TV show on, whether it's a Friday night or whether it's a Saturday morning, and you can get your kids and your family and your whole gang and get up in front of that television, and you know that when you turn off that TV or when you turn it on, you're going to wind up smiling and having a good time. And that's what we think is most important. You know, you need to have a good time with your family. You need to enjoy life because you never know, what the next day brings.
Mm-hmm. Animal Planet's Tank comes your way tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time, and it's replayed throughout the week on Animal Planet. Check your local news for where it's available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online and the network, too, go to www.animalplanet.com. That's www.animalplanet.com. That's Tanks, continuing Season 7 tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Brett Raymer, one of the co-hosts and co-people behind Tanks, thank you so much for coming on. All the very best to you and Wayne for the rest of the season. Congratulations on your upcoming marriage. Hope everything is great with you and your family, and we really appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, my pleasure, and you guys have a great weekend.
Will do. Take care. All the greatest.
Thank you.
Brett Raymer, co-host and co-founder of the company making Tanked, joining us live from Las Vegas. Again, we apologize that Matt Carr, the executive producer for Animal Planet, could not be with us here in New York, and we hope that maybe down the road we can have him talking about that and other shows on that network. Once again, Tanked is on 9 p.m. East Pacific time on Animal Planet. Check your local listings on cable and satellite for where the show and the network is at. And once again, the website is www.animalplanet.com. Taking a quick pause. When we come back, some thoughts about the New York Television Festival, which is beginning to wrap up here in New York, and a groundbreaking event that took place yesterday that could pay off dividends. Plus, we will get ready for our final half hour with two people from down under who are making a splash on Sundance TV. So stay where you are. We will be right back. we're back with more of Tomorrow Be Televised as we get ready to reach the top of the hour. This week I've had the opportunity to go quite a bit to the New York Television Festival, year number 13, taking place at the Helen Mills Theater and the SVA School of Visual Arts Theater in Manhattan, pretty close to each other in the Chelsea area. And yesterday, something happened that was new, unique, and groundbreaking. It was the formal showcase, first showcase, of a new group called the Asian American TV and Film Alliance. Their mission is to bring U.S. and Chinese producers, show creators, directors together to create projects that could be done in either country and ultimately could be presented around the world. And their first effort in public was called the U.S.-China Collaborative Summit. It was at the Helen Mills Theater. It was yesterday morning. I had a chance to be there, and I had a chance to hear what was going on. And there's no question that there is Chinese talent out there that wants to make it here in the United States, and there's Asian American talent out there that also wants to make it in China. I really think there's an opportunity with this project. I'm looking forward to seeing how this develops. One of my favorite things was to have an opportunity to meet with people from Alibaba Pictures. That's the, and by the way, Alibaba announces its latest quarterly results next week. And what I found out is that Alibaba Pictures already has a unit of people, I believe they're based in Los Angeles, who want to do television here in the U.S. So maybe not too far down the road, we could see a deal where Asian American talent gets the opportunity to create new television series to be seen here, maybe ultimately around the world. We will keep you posted as to what is going on with this project. We have invited people from the Alliance to come on our program as soon as possible next month. And as I said, we'll keep you posted. In the meantime, the New York Television Festival winds down tomorrow night with its annual awards ceremony. And we hope also next month to have one or two of the winners of that competition, the Independent Pilot Competition, on our program. You still have an opportunity, by the way, tonight and tomorrow to catch festival activity, whether it's screenings of independently produced pilots, to Development Day events that will be happening throughout the day tomorrow. If you want more information and get tickets, you still can. If you're in New York or plan to be in New York tonight or tomorrow, the way you where you go is www.nytvf.com. It's www.nytvf.com. When we come back, we hope to be joined by a pair that are best friends, best buds in the world of comedy down under, and now they are taking America by storm through Sundance TV on a program called Rose Haven. Comedians, co-stars, co-creators and writers Luke McGregor and Theda Pakola will join us live right here after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You are listening to www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Me, MG, and the Hat Show. It's the show about everything. Hear how tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, MG and the Hat Show. That's the show about everything, and it all happens here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from Nueva York. Two more guests we expect your way in the next half hour. Welcome to those who are just joining us at the top of the hour. 60 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple. Pretty nice day, and we expect that at least the first half of the weekend will be pretty good in terms of temperature, around the 70s. I understand, however, there's a Midwest storm that's supposed to hit us on Sunday and Monday, giving us a lot of rain, some of which, by the way, we do need. We have some areas in the area that are a little bit on the drought side. Anyway, stand by for a moment. For those of you just joining us, we are not doing our show the regular way as we do through my smartphone because my smartphone has low power. We're doing it through a speakerphone and computer. My computer is in one place and in my place, and the speakerphone's in another. So hang on for a second. We're going to bring up our guests. So stand by. We'll be right back, hopefully, with our folks from Rose Haven. Again, welcome back to those of you joining us have been with us all along this hour and change, and those of you just joining us at the top of the hour, you have a question or comment for our next guest, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's been anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. Another way you're involved, our chat room, it's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room, either way we hear it. By the way, while the show is on the air, you can use Facebook Timeline to connect you with others. Check on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. And joining us live, I believe, right now, are two people who have known each other for a very long time. down under in Australia, the Tasmanian area of Australia, and now they're taking America by storm, specifically Sundance TV, on a show you can find Wednesday nights at 11 o'clock, the second season of, called Rosehaven. Joining us live are the co-stars, co-creators, and writers of the program, Celia Pacola and Luke McGregor. C and Luke, are you there?
Yes, we are.
Yes, hello, how are you?
Good to have you with us. Where are you calling from?
We are in L.A., near the Comedy Store, actually, just across the road. Huh?
Just remember, listen, Luke just looked out the window, which is a very, very, I understand it, how the experts do it.
Yes.
Perfect location.
Yeah.
Yes.
How long have you two known each other?
Look, it's got to be going on 5 to 6 years now, but it feels longer.
Feels longer.
It really feels longer.
50 years. Too long.
Mm-hmm. And is this the first time that both of you have been traveling the United States to hear what people have to say or see what people have to say about your program?
It is, yeah. It's the first time. Well, it's the first time. Seals has been here before early on to do stand-up. This is my first time here. I mostly just went to all the places Ghostbusters was filmed. That was the first thing I did when I got here to New York, was just go straight to the fire station from Ghostbusters. It's been pretty much a Ghostbusters tour since I got here. Luckily, Celia has been very accommodating of that. But yeah, it's amazing. It's incredible to be in the same place where, you know, just every film from our childhood and every show from our childhood is, you know, it's made here, or, you know, just where all the celebrities we knew growing up and know now are living here. Like, it's amazing. It's so cool to be here.
Well, see, it looks like for you and Luke, you've got a winner on your hands in this neck of the world. With Rosehaven, first season came on earlier this year, did very, very well in September, and now you're back with all new episodes. Among the people you've gotten a hold of here in the U.S., what did they have to say about your show? What do they like about it?
Oh, look, because we had no idea really coming here what the response would be like. And as part of the New York TV Festival, we did a screening, which was the first time we were sitting in the room with Americans and them watching it, and they laughed, which was a great time. What we found is that they seem to like, I don't know, that it's the relationship, because it's about a platonic friendship, and that it's nice. It's sort of one of the overwhelming reactions that we get is that it's genuinely nice people doing silly things. No one's really out to get anyone. There's no real villains. It's just sort of people trying to do the best that they can and generally failing a lot at being a person, at being a grown-up we've accidentally made a family show, so it feels quite identifiable, even though to us it's very specific about a very specific part of the world.
Yeah, maybe if we get to season 7 or something, we'll have an episode where half the characters die. But so far it's just a small town comedy in a small town, basically. Yeah.
We've been told the sort of closest amalgamation in the US would be something like Alaska to Tasmania. Is that kind of vibe? But we found people are getting on board with it, which is great.
Yeah, if people listening haven't been to Tassie, I guess the best way to describe Tasmania is you could film a low budget Lord of the Rings there if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. I've never heard of Alaska being mentioned in the same sense as Tasmania, but now that you think about it, there might be parts of. Although there are a lot of shows about Alaska on Discovery Channel and other networks here in the United States. Who might take a little issue with it? They're very proud of their.
Oh, I've broken Hollywood already. Oh, no. Every day.
I'm only kidding.
Narnia. It's like Narnia.
It's like Narnia.
It's like Middle Earth.
The Matrix. Exactly, the Matrix.
Oh, now we're getting way out here. Oh yeah, Narnia, Middle Earth.
Yeah.
A galaxy far, far away, shall we say? Luke, how did you and Celia come up with the idea of Rosehaven, the idea of this platonic relationship in this very unusual part of your country?
We'd worked together on a show called Utopia, which is called Dreamland in the US, we just sort of got along really well in between takes, basically, just in between setups. We were just sort of talking rubbish, so we just kind of wanted to do a show that was just us, like our friendship, and then just trying to find the right vehicle for it, I suppose. So my parents are real estate agents, and Celia's from a small town, so we just kind of combined the two together to come up with Rosehaven. But it was one of
several pitches before we actually got it up. I think our first pitch was like Philly worked for a psychic hotline, and I was one of the callers. And then we had another era show that was what else did we have?
Haunted
house, haunted realty. Yeah, so Rosehaven was kind of like the one we settled on. Where I know it just kind of felt right.
And we tried a pitch where we were like a couple, because that was sort of, it seemed like the obvious choice, but then it just didn't work.
Yeah,
it just didn't work for us at all.
Right.
But actually, in the end, we're a lot happier that it's that people are accepting of it being a platonic friendship and enjoying that, and not being like, it's really not a will they, were they at all. It's a, they never will.
Yeah, they never will. If we run out of story ideas, we might have a wedding episode, but otherwise it's, it's just nice to, we just like having a friendship like we do in real life, basically.
Well, yeah, you don't see that as often, and, it comes with its own set of complications. Like, you know, Daniel has a long-term partner. What happens when you have a, you know, that has to be a very understanding partner who's okay with me spending more time with him than her, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
That was kind of where we, the show's pretty much just us in real life, really. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sundance TV is bringing its first comedy to life Wednesday nights at 11 p.m. It's called Rosehaven. It comes from Australia, and we've got the two people involved with it, the co-stars, co-creators, co-writers, and best friends in real, absolute life. We have Cesar Piccola and Luke McGregor. They're with us live from Los Angeles near the Comedy Store, one of the great clubs of comedy anywhere in the U.S. of A. And they're with us live this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum, who is you live from New York, delighted you are with us wherever you are along the Blog Talk Radio way, nationwide or globe-wide. And we invite you to be part of the program. Give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have a big treat coming your way on Monday. It's a blockbuster hour you will not want to miss. On the first half of the hour, Internet Radio exclusive interview with James Duff, the creator and executive producer first of The Closer and now Major Crimes on TNT, which will begin its sixth and final season there next Tuesday. But might it be revived somewhere else? We will ask James when we have him on Monday. Then on the second half of the hour, from Netflix's Emmy Award-winning program Stranger Things, which began its second season earlier today, co-executive producer Dan Cohen. James Duff of Major Crimes, Dan Cohen of Stranger Things, both with us live, both Internet exclusive, both taking your phone calls and chat room reaction. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. It's a Tomorrow Will Be Televised episode I promise you will not want to miss. It all gets underway, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Celia, what are some of the situations that you and Luke get into with your characters in season two?
Season two is sort of we wanted to explore a little bit more. You know, we were just a bit more relaxed because the first season went well, so we were excited that people, you know, were on board with us. So there's a bunch of real estate storylines. We've got neighbor disputes, but just strange stuff. Someone put a mirror up, and their neighbor is convinced that mirror is blasting negative energy into their home, and that's a difficult thing to prove. So there's that sort of issue. The small town has a fair. Which takes over the whole town with a costume competition. It's a very small town thing. What else do they get up to this season? Daniel's bully, childhood bully, asks Emma on a date, which is, you know, absolutely not allowed in the best friends rulebook.
Yeah, and we...
But generally very small problems that they make into very large deals.
And we get banned from the only general store because Emma tries to buy a muffin that's the biggest one, but you're just supposed to get the one you're given. So they,
we're really tackling all of the big
issues.
Major issues.
But no meteorite hits the town or anything. It's quite small-scale stuff.
When you do a show like this and you have 8 episodes to get what you want in for a season, how much of the program or how much of the plotting is you, real life, and how much of it is experiences you have had with other people? Like, for example, Luke, you've got this intimidating, dominating mother played by Chris McQuaid that you have to deal with time in and time again in your home life. How much of it is you and how much of it is inspired by people you deal with or family members?
Yeah, Chris is Barbara in the show, my mum in the show, is she's inspired by my mum, but by the absolute polar opposite of my mum. So my mum is very generous and talkative and likes going out to parties and is very loving, whereas when we wrote the character of Barbara, we just kind of did the opposite.
She's sort of what you'd imagine Luke and Daniel's mother to be. Like, Luke as a stand-up and as a person is quite anxious and nervous. I don't think you'd mind me saying
honest,
that. Luke.
I know, I was very
you know, over apologetic. So when I met your mum in the real life, I was very surprised to find her, you know, the most loving, generous, caring, overly glad. So Barbara's sort of what you'd imagine, you know, and just to give us a character with the two of us acting like such idiots and such children and so immature, the show really needed someone, you know, a strong, bold sort of character like her to keep everything from falling apart. If she wasn't there, I think they'd burn the house down with him. 20 minutes.
And other times it's just a character where we just thought it would be a, even though we don't know anyone like that in real life, we thought it'd just be a funny combo. Like Greg the policeman is just a it's just a policeman who's a real pushover and is really apologetic whenever he has to find someone. We just thought that would be a funny idea for a character in Small Town where, you know, if he has to give someone a speeding ticket, he's really apologetic about it, or he writes a smiley face on the speeding ticket. Like it's just that sort of stuff where we just thought that might be a fun combination.
So that's not from anything from real life.
Yeah,
that was just something that we thought would work well as a dynamic.
But yeah, so it's just kind of... Oh, no, you're sorry.
No, go ahead.
But yeah, the hardest part with the writing process I found was quite often when we would write a character but we'd have no idea how that interacts talking to another character in the show. So it wasn't until the second season we were able to explore it a bit more where... You know, now we feel like if all the characters were trapped in the elevator, we'd know how they'd react to each other. But in the first season, when they're just kind of like, you know, just summaries on a Word document, it's just we're just like, oh God, what music do they listen to? What sports do they like? Or what would they do in a scary situation? It was so hopefully the second season, we started to have a bit more fun with them.
Mm-hmm. How much of the program or each episode? How long does it take you to do an episode? Write, produce it, get it on film or videotape, and how much of each episode is improv? Because both of you are best friends, I would think you know, like, each other's rhythms, each other's habits, each other's, like, here's where I want to go in the era of comedy. So I'm curious, you know, how much that comes across on the screen in terms of the ability to improvise dialogue or take advantage of a situation in ways you didn't expect when you started writing the episode.
Sure. In terms of how long, because the first season was like 3 years in the making because it was a longer, slower pitching process, slower outline network, that kind of stuff. But the actual filming itself is 7 weeks to do 8 half-hours. And the second series was a lot faster because we found out right when the last episode of season one had gone to air that season two was going ahead. So we wrote season two in about 5 months.
Yeah, real quick.
And then we're filming that for 7 weeks again. In terms of improvising on set, we don't really do much. We're really happy that it comes across that it is improvised, which is mainly because we improvised it in the writing phase, because we'd sit together and talk rubbish and then write that down. So it was improvised at one stage.
Yeah, and then we do live reads in front of an audience. We usually get about 30 people or so in we've got a theatre in Melbourne that we just do a live read of the show with the actors and just to see which jokes are getting laughs and which ones aren't. And then we sort of rewrite based on the live reads just to sort of keep it fresh and to just to see what's working, what's not. And also when we're doing it live, if a bit of dialogue stands out as feeling a bit unnatural, then we can sort of hear it in the room. So then we rewrite the scripts basically based on those live reads.
Do people ever tell either of you that's a very rare practice to take a show before you tape it or film it to a live audience, a small live audience, and see what works? I don't think there's any show in the United States that does that. I do know that way, 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 way back when, the Marx Brothers would take, before they went to did a film, like A Night at the Opera or Day at the Races, mm-hmm. they would actually do a stage production of it and take it from town to town to see how the audience would react. And the best lines would stay in the movie when it got made, the worst lines would out.
I think it's because we found that out later. I think it's because we've got a stand-up background. Like, we know people who are writers who are like, I would never show anyone until it's 100% finished. But for us, we wanted it to get in front of an audience as soon as possible to find out where the jokes were.
Yeah, we're so used to feedback from doing stand-up.
Yeah.
I remember being on set when we first started filming and, you know, when we do a joke, if the crew didn't double over with laughter, we'd be like, oh, worried. Oh, no, they hate it. But, you know, they're just trying to be professional and not laugh during takes. But the live read almost, it almost helps, like, I don't know, validate the writing or make us feel better about certain jokes and things. Yeah.
And I think this process, another thing that I found interesting, I grew up with a lot of UK comedy, and I like over there, they, most of their sitcoms are tried out first on radio before they're filmed. Like, they'll do them as a radio play before making them as a TV series. So I feel like, there's examples of it being done in the past. But, it was our favourite part of the process. It was my favourite part of the process, definitely.
Yeah.
It's the day we got to take it, because we'd spent so long, just the two of us in a room going, I think this is funny, I don't know.
And if you have a lot of the jokes, like, you know, because we're writing for so long, you know, you'll have a joke that's 6 months old, and we're like, is this still funny? And, like, with the library, it helps us sort of, I don't know, be confident that joke's, because the new joke's always the funniest one to us. So the library help us sort of cement in which ones are working and which ones aren't.
You are hearing Celia Pacuola and Luke McGregor. They're the co-stars and co-creator writers of Rosehaven. It's the brand new series on Sundance TV that has really become a cause celeb here in the U.S. of A. On late nights, Wednesday nights specifically, on 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock Central, 11 p.m. Pacific on Sundance TV. Celia and Luke join us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Got a few more minutes with them. We'd love to have you aboard as well. So give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Friday on the program, we'll showcase a brand new venture that was announced last week at NYC Television Week called Oli Hub. It may become a big, important new way for new TV series makers to get their programs on the air here in the United States and maybe elsewhere. Tom Mueller, the chief executive of Olympusat, the folks behind this new venture, will be with us. And we also hope next week, in case you missed the beginning of the show, we had a news note that Fusion, the network from Univision Communications, through its creative board with people like Viola Davis and Jodie Foster on it, is now having an open call for new scripted and unscripted television series by young talent, whether or not they have an agent. And whatever they do pick out of the submission process will be an ongoing process, will be made into new television series on Fusion. We expect to have somebody from Fusion on the air next Friday, at 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Over the years, people here in the United States have had a chance to see television from your country, from Australia, and usually it is either drama, shows like Top of the Lake, or shows that have had American stars. And I remember there's a TV series that Peter Graves of Mission Impossible fame was in for some time back in like the 1950s, early 60s, after he did Fury back in the 50s, the famous animal drama featuring a wonderful horse, Stallion, that was on NBC for Saturday morning for a lot of the years. But they very rarely see comedy, except for maybe once in a while, something like Paul Hogan, the Paul Hogan Show, which did very well in late night, ironically, here in the States. What is the comedy TV scene like in Australia? What kind of comedy is being produced there?
Well, it exists in main part to the ABC, which is like is our national broadcaster. It's like the Australian version of the BBC, who are so supportive of narrative scripted comedy. Particularly at the moment, they're making so many new shows and supporting local content, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and it's a lot of sort of single camera sitcoms in Australia. I don't think we've had a live studio audience sort of multicam since the 80s or the 90s, maybe.
They sort of try them every. They tried one anyway. Yeah.
But yeah, it's sort of panel type shows where you know they'll have stand up comedians come on talking about different issues and things. They're quite popular, but it's mostly the single camera sort of narrative sitcoms that are really popular, and they're all about half an hour, and they're usually about average 6 to 8 episodes.
Yeah, and for comedy, a lot of the time it's stand up doing something that's kind of self-referential, not like, for example, our story, which is similar to us, but like Ronnie Cheng, who you might know, who's based in New York now. He did his show International Students, which was about, you know, being an international student at university. So a lot of the times it's a person who has a stand-up comedy background and then writing a scripted narrative comedy.
It's what's amazing, like in America, where like some of my favourite comedies in America are like 20 episodes or something like the and they're
which is crazy. For us, it's always, it used to be 6 episodes, 6 half hours, and now
like
it's 6 or 8.
Even 8 for us seemed like a lot. Like we were really scared we wouldn't be able to write that many.
But it's hard. It's not a lot of fun. Like it's tricky. It's small. It's why we have to film
really.
It's not a lot of time. It's not a lot of money. So which is kind of the good thing about that is everyone involved really wants to make it and really believed in making it. So you got a lot of really dedicated people not making a whole lot of money, but making a lot of shows. It's an exciting time.
Speaking of a lot of shows, one of the great things about YouTube, no matter where you find it, anywhere in the world, is you get the chance to see some of those classics of Australian television. For example, in drama shows like Neighbours, Homicide is a very interesting show out of like the late 50s, early 60s, The Sullivans. There was a show called Prisoner Cell Block H that for a while was syndicated here in the United States and was also a very big influence in terms of some dramas. I'm sure it influenced shows like Oz, Orange and the New Black, came out of, in a way, Sobok H. And then there was entrepreneur Greg Grundy, who did a lot of game shows, including a show called Sale of the Century, which actually was by a man named Al Howard here in the United States when it ran NBC in the early 70s. And then Greg Grundy did it in Australia, became a big hit. And then, of course, in the 80s, he did it here in the United States with the late Jim Perry as the host, and it had a great run. So that's one of the fun things about YouTube is that you can see some of the best Australian television of all time, both comedy, variety, and drama, anytime you like.
I want to hear a very crass Australiana thing. But I just have to tell you, because I feel like it might be. It's Reg Grundy. So we know Reg Grundy because it would come up at the end of all of Sale of the Century. Because it's the Reg Grundy production. But Australians love a bit of
alliteration. Sale of the Century is a Reg Grundy production. Title sequence.
If you referred to someone's Reg Grundy's, it was their underwear. Because it was Reg Grundy undies.
Oh, yeah.
So when you say Reg Grundy to me, I think of underwear. That was our slang word for make sure you're wearing your clean Reg Grundy.
Reg Grundy.
Completely with love. Oh, there you go. That's an Australian fun fact.
Anyway, on that note, we are going to have to, unfortunately, wrap it up. It has been a delight to have both of you on. And the show is called Rose Haven, now in its second run of episodes on Sundance TV. You can catch it this coming Wednesday night, 11 Eastern and Pacific time. Check your local news where Sundance TV is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.sundance.tv. That's www.sundance.tv. If you haven't heard about it, check it out. I think you're going to find it one very delightful television show, and I hope it will run quite long beyond the first two seasons. Celia Piccolo, Luke McGraver, thank you so much for coming on the program, taking time from your tour here in the United States. Have a great rest of your time here, and I hope we have many, many more seasons of Rose Haven coming our way.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
You're welcome. Take care. All the greatest. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. Bye.
Celia Piccolo, Luke McGraver from Rose Haven. Remember, it's Wednesday nights, 11 o'clock, Eastern Pacific on Sundance TV. And that will do it for this edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Thanks to all my guests for being with us the last 90 minutes and all of you for tuning in. Remember, coming up on Monday, James Duff from Major Crimes on TNT and Dan Cohen from Stranger Things, which began its second season earlier today on Netflix. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version this weekend at iTunes.com, or if you have Apple TV, the iTunes podcast app. Either way, you can download it to your smartphone or tablet, take us on the go, and spread the love any way you like. Remember, we love hearing from you. What do you think about today's program? What do you think about where TV's at and where it's going? We'd love to hear. So email simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and where you're from. Find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter, UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, we love hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of this enterprise are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. Go to www.audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow We Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful weekend ahead. We are back on Monday with a blockbuster hour for you. It's the day before Halloween. We're going to make it great for you with James Duff of Major Crimes and Dan Cohen of Stranger Things. Be with us, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Whatever you're up to this weekend, be safe and be great out there. And until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.